This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm Al Cresto. We're back for another hour talking about the things that matter most. Courtney Grogan, in a commentary for Catholic News Agency, has a wonderful lead-in on St. Joseph. Let me read it to you. As the father of Alfie Evans fought to defend his son's life, I could not help but think of St. Joseph fleeing the threat of King Herod's tyranny with the Christ child in his arms. And this is a good time in history to look to St. Joseph. That was what Leo XIII's intention was. Quote, Joseph became the guardian, the administrator, and the legal defender of the divine house whose chief he was. He guarded from death the child threatened by a monarch's jealousy and found for him a refuge. St. Joseph is a saint for our times. He's for modernity. We need his wisdom in a society that sanctions euthanasia. We need him for the modern workplace in which there's extraordinary discontent among workers. We need him at a time where there's family breakdown in our society. So I want to talk about St. Joseph in this hour. Also, Carlo Broussard from Catholic Answers Live will be joining us, sharing the gospel with family and friends. Should be enjoyable. It shouldn't be a chore. And Carlo has a number of strategies to help us answer what can sometimes be difficult questions. I think his approach is something we shows a patience and an insight that we haven't often seen in works on apologetics. So he'll be my guest coming up in the next hour as well. But right now, let's get to the headlines.
Thank you, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, May 2nd. It's the Feast of St. Athanasius. Today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. White House lawyer Ty Cobb is leaving President Trump's legal team. Cobb was one of the lawyers hired to represent President Trump in the Russia investigation. He'll reportedly be replaced by attorney Emmett Flood. Meanwhile, President Trump is threatening to, quote, get involved in the Russia investigation and tweeted he may have, quote, no choice but to use the powers granted to the presidency. A North Texas high school student is under arrest on claims he was preparing an ISIS-inspired attack at a mall. The FBI says Mateen Azizi Yarlan has also considered attacks on a school and a Hindu temple. The 17-year-old is accused of talking to an FBI confidential sources about the plot that would include killing police, setting stores on fire, and taking hostages. He apparently learned about Islam over the Internet and is charged with solicitation of capital murder and terroristic threats. The Pope is praying for peace in Syria. Francis announced on Sunday that he would make a rosary pilgrimage to ask the Blessed Virgin Mary to bring peace to Syria. He also asked Catholics to join him in spirit on the pilgrimage and to pray the rosary for peace during the month of May. In the city of Philadelphia, two black men arrested for refusing to leave a Starbucks are settling their differences. Rashawn Nelson and Dante Robinson said today they're settling with the city for a symbolic $1 each and a city promise to put up $200,000 to set up a program for young entrepreneurs. The two were arrested and released on April 12th with no charges filed. And now for your fascinating fact for the day. When grazing or resting, cows tend to align their bodies with the magnetic north and south poles. Filling in for Nick Tom, I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Yesterday was the Feast of St. Joseph the Worker. And I wanted to point out an aspect of St. Joseph's patronage that I think is often forgotten. Catherine Siena, we talked about yesterday, a mystic, but also very engaged in the world. And in this, she was a perfect disciple of the Catholic faith, because the church is in the world bearing witness to the coming kingdom, and it bears witness to that coming kingdom by trying to live out the priorities of that kingdom right here on earth. On earth as in heaven, right? So, back in 1848, Marx and Engels published their Communist Manifesto. This, of course, has been a blockbuster. It has changed world history. They called for a worldwide revolution of workers to break open the class struggle. And then 40 years later, on May 1st, they chose, I mean, International Workers' Day. The communists chose International Workers' Day, May Day, to celebrate the achievements of socialism in memory of the labor riots in Chicago in 1886, called the Haymarket Riots. Now, the Catholic Church is very much aware of all this social problem. Workers and management, rich and poor, markets and labor. The Catholic Church is very much aware that its members were living in a world like that. And so in 1846, 2 years before the Communist Manifesto, Pope Pius IX published his first encyclical, Qui Pluribus. And it was the first papal condemnation of communism. True solution to the world's woes, the Pope said, was not revolutionary upheaval or a call to materialistic atheism. What men needed and what they were obliged to was to give themselves to God. The ideal model for men was Saint Joseph, the worker, the patron of social justice. Then in 1889, Leo XIII, in an encyclical called Quumquam Pluris, yes, they do sound funny, don't they? And it sounds like a fruit. An encyclical letter on devotion to St. Joseph presented St. Joseph as a model. This is at a time when the world and the church were wrestling with the challenges of a new century, about the turn of the century. And Pope Leo said, "It is then true that the condition of the lowly has nothing shameful in it, and the work of the laborer is not only not dishonoring, but can, if virtue be joined to it, be singularly ennobling." The church, again, engaging St. Joseph, the worker, and a pushback against socialism and communism. A few years later, Leo XIII went on then to publish his magisterial encyclical, Rerum Novarum, which was an encyclical on capital and labor, and is often considered the first great social encyclical. It was meant to ensure the dignity of workers, of laborers. 1920, Benedict XV offers St. Joseph as a special guide and a heavenly patron of laborers to keep them immune from the contagion of socialism, the bitter enemy of Christian principles. In 1936, Pope Pius XI declared St. Joseph to be patron of the universal church and said, "We place the vast campaign of the church against the world of communism under the standard of St. Joseph." My point through all of this is to say, look, the church, which is bearing witness to the kingdom of God, isn't just pointing us to heaven. It's pointing us to our responsibilities on the earth so that we can bear witness to that kingdom of heaven. He also, by the way, Pius IX also gave the church many encyclicals and allocutions and speeches combating the errors of the Marxist creed, you might put it. Most eloquent, I think, was 1937's Divini Redemptoris, in which he wrote, "This apostolic see knows that its proper social mission is to defend truth and justice and all those eternal values which communism ignores or attacks." And then, roughly 18 years later, in a speech given to the Christian Association of Italian Workers on May 1st, 1955, Pius XII set aside May 1st as the feast of St. Joseph the Workman. So he had given an audience to the Catholic Association of Italian Workers. They were there in St. Peter's Square celebrating their 10th anniversary, and they wanted to publicly renew their commitment to the social doctrine of the church. And so Pope Pius used the occasion to speak, quote, "Whereas communism and its handmade socialism fomented class warfare polluted with envy, the feast of St. Joseph the Worker, far from being a stimulus for discord, hate, and violence, will be a recurring invitation to modern society to accomplish that which is still lacking for social peace. It's a Christian feast, a jubilant day for the concrete and progressive triumph of the Christian ideals of the great family of labor." So the church says, we're not going to give you May 1st. No longer are you going to, communists going to have the monopoly on a day of celebration on behalf of workers. in the future, the Catholic would have its own feast day, continue its divine mission to guide, protect, to love, and even to come alongside the suffering of those who are most in need of defense and help, and that would include workers and other sons of the people. So, again, the church has a festival to remind men of the dignity of work. And also, the aim is to inspire laws founded on what they call, what the church calls, the equal division of rights and duties. The church saw that communism had been a machine for producing conflict and ignored the worker. It saw the worker principally as a utilitarian cog in a machine. And to this madness, the Catholic faith would be opposed and wanted to remind the children of the faith that we had a worker as a model, and that was St. Joseph. Now, just a few days ago, Courtney Grogan, in an insightful commentary for the Catholic News Association, expanded the appeal of St. Joseph. Courtney starts by pointing out that as the father of Alfie Evans fought to defend his son's life, Courtney couldn't help but think of St. Joseph fleeing the threat of King Herod's tyranny with the Christ child in his arms. And then Courtney goes on to say, look, St. Joseph is an apt recourse for the unique troubles facing society in the 21st century. I think Courtney did a great job. And I want to read over some of the points made here. For a modernity that sanctions euthanasia, we turn to St. Joseph, who is the patron of the dying. As the modern workplace reckons with the fallout of the sexual revolution and the Me Too movement, we can turn to the chaste leadership of St. Joseph the worker. Faced with the breakdown of the family in society, the head of the Holy Family models faithful fatherhood. In what Pope Francis has called a throwaway culture, we have St. Joseph, the artisan, the craftsman. As society condones abortion, St. Joseph stands guard over expectant mothers. At a time when the number of refugees worldwide has hit record numbers, St. Joseph himself, who was once a refugee, watches over immigrants. In what Cardinal Seurat has called the dictatorship of noise, St. Joseph is a saint of humble silence. The globalized 21st century needs St. Joseph, who Blessed Pius IX named the patron of the Universal Church back in 1870. And if you want to be close to Christ, I repeat to you, ite ad Joseph, go to Joseph. Again, Venerable Pius XII in 1955, when he celebrated the feast of St. Joseph the Worker. Despite the 20th century church's emphasis on St. Joseph the Worker, however, it cannot be emphasized that Joseph's life was not simply defined by his work, his utility. It was defined, of course, ultimately by his fatherhood. St. John Paul II, in his book, Rise, Let Us Be on Our Way, wrote that for St. Joseph, the life with Jesus was a continuous discovery of his own vocation as a father. You know, I fathered five children myself, and from the ages of 36 down to 16 right now, and I find myself still developing my sense of fatherhood, what it means to be a father. That vocation isn't over once the kids are out of the house. John Paul II went on to say, Jesus himself, as a man, experienced the fatherhood of God through the father-son relationship with St. Joseph. And this filial encounter with Joseph then fed into our Lord's revelation of the paternal name of God. What a profound mystery. It was interesting. John Paul II saw firsthand the communist attempt to separate the family unit and undermine parental authority in Poland. So he looked to St. Joseph's fatherhood as a model for his own priestly fatherhood and for the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe. Courtney Rounds write that Alfie Evans' father, Tom, had written that he was absolutely heartbroken that his son had died on April 28th. you probably remember, this father had been denied his opportunity to seek refuge for Alfie in Italy. We had a church hospital there ready to take Alfie Evans, but the courts in the United Kingdom forbade him to be brought to Italy. So for fathers who face the same grief as Tom Evans, we can pray Leo XIII's prayer to St. Joseph. Aid us from on high, most valiant defender, in this conflict with the powers of darkness. And even as of old thou didst rescue the child Jesus from the peril of his life, so now defend God's holy church from the snares of the enemy and from all adversity. Beautifully said. Again, many of those words came from Courtney Grogan's commentary on St. Joseph the Worker in the 21st century. Let me point out the first point that I made at the beginning of this commentary, and that is that the church, for all the claim that the church is so heavenly minded, it's of no earthly good, when you hear somebody say that, they are showing their ignorance. They are showing that they haven't a clue as to how the Catholic Church has continued on from the New Covenant instituted at the Last Supper right on up to the present day. The Church has always been in the world, reminding the world that humanity has had a new start in Jesus. The Church is itself a distinct society which is intended to portray a way of life that the world is to look to and to say, I want that. St. Joseph, the worker, as well as St. Joseph, the husband, helps us remember that calling. I'm Al Cresta.
The Lansing Diocesan Knights of Columbus 2018 Living Rosary will be hosted by St. Mary Cathedral's Knights of Columbus Council. This prayer gathering will be held on the East Lawn of the State Capitol in Lansing on Saturday, May 12th at 11 a.m. Join them as they ask for Mary's intercession for families. The theme is Building the Domestic Church, the Family Fully Alive. Refreshments served on the Capitol grounds. See living-rosary.org. That's living-rosary.org.
Hi, I'm Dan Weingartz. Our family has been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment for your lawn since 1945. Our experts will help you choose the right product from top brands like Steel. From legendary chainsaws, dependable trimmers, and powerful blowers, a Steel is designed for reliability and built for the long haul. And our expert service technicians and world-class parts inventory will keep your equipment running like new. Visit us to see the full Steel line or see all of our specials at Weingartz.com.
Weingartz, everything from lawn to snow.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
This is Auxiliary Bishop Bob Fisher of the Archdiocese of Detroit. Every year, Manresa Jesuit Retreat House holds a silent auction to benefit their adoptive retreatant fund, which allows men and women to attend a retreat regardless of ability to pay. This year's event is being held at the Shenandoah Country Club on Thursday, May 3rd at 6 p.m. Come hear Christopher Lowney, best-selling author of Pope Francis, Why He Leads the Way He Leads. Call the Retreat House or go to manresa-sj.org. God bless.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
When Jesus rose from the dead, he changed human thinking completely and forever enlarged the human horizon, totally changing our perspective on our life and lifespan. Jesus died in order to send the Holy Spirit upon us, and today we see that Holy Spirit in action. The early church had expanded so fast it shocked the Jews and raised a big question. Do you have to become a Jew before you can be a Christian? We know the answer, but it's useful to see how they got to it. Some instructed the brothers, unless you're circumcised according to the law of Moses, you can't be saved. And after Paul and Barnabas debated with them, it was decided they should go up to Jerusalem to consult the apostles and presbyters about this question. And they sent on their journey by the church and passed through Phoenicia and Samaria, telling of the conversion of the Gentiles, and brought great joy to all the brothers. And when they arrived in Jerusalem, they reported what God had done with them. But some Jewish believers stood up and said, it's necessary to circumcise them and direct them to observe the law of Moses. Some ways they were like the traditionalists today, who anchor after a pre-Vatican II church. So they held council together, and the apostles and presbyters met together at what we call the Council of Jerusalem. And there the question was resolved once and for all. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, commenting on the reading read today at Mass. You can reach on 734-930-3257. And remember, inspired by the Word of God, you can be more fully alive.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. I'm sure many of you have already heard my guest, Carlo Broussard. He is frequently on Catholic Answers Live taking questions. He's a native of southern Louisiana, now resides in Southern California with his wife and five children. He's a staff apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers and has written a number of books. He gives talks on apologetics, biblical studies, theology, philosophy. And most recently, he's given us a tremendous asset in the field of apologetics and evangelization. It's called Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And it's got what I consider to be a fairly novel methodology. Its approach shows tremendous patience with the inquirer. And we'll illustrate that as we have our conversation today. Carlo, it's great to have you with me. Thanks.
Hey, Al, thank you for having me, my friend. It's great to be on with you.
Yeah, I think it's the first time we've been together on the air.
Indeed it is.
Yeah.
Indeed it is, and it's a great honor, Al.
Well, thank you. I love the book, by the way. I want
you
to know that, I'll tell you why. Because you show incredible patience with the inquirer, and this is a step-by-step way of communicating with people who have this gives honest answers to honest questions, and not just in general ways. This is, again, quite specific
right.
ways.
Go right ahead. No, I was just going to say what I tried to do in the book is the purpose and the aim of the book was to basically coach the reader,
yep.
whether the reader is particularly a Catholic, and that's, you know, my primary audience. But as you know, Al, the majority of the book can be utilized by non-Catholic Christians as well.
Yep.
Because the majority of the obstacles that unbelievers face, all Christians across the board are called to help remove these obstacles for unbelievers.
Right.
But the purpose was to coach the reader. So, you know, initially we were thinking, okay, what's the primary audience of the book? Do we want to write a book that we just give to an unbeliever for them to read? Or do we want to write a book that we give to a Catholic or a Christian in general in order to assimilate the information and then go out and evangelize? And we chose the latter. And so the purpose is to coach the reader in strategies on how to remove the various obstacles, whether intellectual or emotional, that unbelievers face,
mm-hmm.
whether that unbeliever is an atheist or an agnostic or simply somebody who might not consider themselves an atheist but is skeptical to Jesus, or an unbeliever just simply might have some beefs with the church, you know, various things that from the outside seem a bit weird.
Right. Right.
And so how can I belong to a church that, you know, is so superstitious, hoards its wealth, you know, abuses children, covers it up,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So the book coaches the reader in strategies with guided questions in order to help remove these obstacles. And the questions are not meant to be snarky.
No.
The questions are meant to draw out ideas, expose certain flawed assumptions, and to simply just guide the conversation alone.
Yeah, I agree. The tone of it is wonderful, and the patience that you show with those questions. Let's take one so listeners can get a sense of what you're doing with the book. Let's go to something that most people are very uncomfortable talking about, and that is hell. Bertrand Russell, the great 20th century philosopher, atheist, or at least agnostic, depending on how he felt in the morning, said that he couldn't believe in Christianity for many reasons. But if he had to pick only one, it's because Jesus taught the doctrine of hell, which he thought was the cruelest possible doctrine that one could teach. So I'll ask the question, how can I believe in Jesus when he threatens to send people to hell?
Yeah, and when we answer that question and address that obstacle, applying it to God is the same as applying it to Jesus, because Jesus is God.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first strategy, I think, would be to explain how it belongs to God's goodness not to coerce human beings into loving him. Okay, so, for example, you could ask your friend in conversation, you know, imagine a man who makes a modest romantic advance to a woman on their date, you know, a simple kiss or something on the cheek, and the woman rejects him. But then all of a sudden he grabs her and tries to kiss her anyway, right?
Right.
Is this a good man? Obviously, I think it's safe to say our friend in conversation would say no, right?
Right, right.
So similarly, it belongs to God's goodness not to coerce himself on human beings into loving him. And with that, given that, arises the possibility of human beings to reject God. And if somebody, given, you know, Al, there's a small tangent here in philosophy, given the nature of an incorporeal spirit choosing, so if we die choosing to reject God, we're fixed in that choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that flows from the very nature of a choice by an incorporeal spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're fixed in that choice after death. So if somebody dies choosing to reject God, well, then it flows by its very nature that that individual soul is going to remain eternally separated from God. And mm-hmm. hell is simply that definitive, as the Catechism of the Catholic Church defines it, is that definitive self-exclusion from God, there in paragraph 1033. So it belongs to God's goodness not to coerce human beings into loving him, and from that flows the possibility to reject him, and if one dies in that rejection of God, then they spend the rest of their existence apart from God.
So this,
strategy two...
This, let
ahead.
Me just say, so this depends really on God's respect for the
That's
creature.
Right.
And
That's right. It
is the nature. This creature has an immortal soul, and so consequently, when that final choice is made, he has ultimately defined. Yeah, that choice crystallizes his identity for eternity, and it's
indeed yeah. it does. Yes, yeah. The moral character, the character and the quality of soul is fixed for the rest of the soul's existence.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring up a good point, Al, because God relates to us according to our nature. God created us, as you said, with an immortal soul, with this capacity to choose him or to reject him. And so God is going to respect that which he created, the very nature of the human being, the very nature of free will, the very nature of the immortal soul. So it's a matter of God respecting the choice, a matter of God respecting acting in accord with the nature of the human being that he created.
And that goes to your second strategy, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, the second strategy is to explain that the everlasting punishment of hell is a matter of justice. And I think, Al, in contemporary culture, we often forget about this. And the reason, one of the things I point out in the book is that the reason we tend to forget about this justice aspect is, I think, Al, because we tend to forget how majestic God is. I mean, God is infinite in dignity. And the only thing that can send us to hell and put us in a state of definitive separation from him is to commit what we call in Catholic theology a mortal sin, that free and willful rejection of God. And, of course, if we die in that state, we'll be fixed in that choice. But the gravity of the offense, which is the free and willful rejection of the infinite God, demands the highest and gravest penalty or punishment, because the punishment is proportion or needs to be proportion to the gravity of the offense. And the gravity of the offense is proportion to the dignity of the person whom we're offending, right? I mean, for example, I'll bring this out in the book. You know, if I get somebody gets in a bar brawl and punches a guy in a bar or in a pub or something, right? Now compare that to somebody punching the President of the United States.
Exactly. Yep.
Obviously, the penalty for punching the President of the United States is going to be more grave than, you know, knocking a guy out in a pub or something. Although that's might be, whether it's justified or not, we'd have to look at that. But the point being is that the penalty will be proportioned to the dignity of the person offended. Since God is infinite in dignity, and hell is the result of this free and willful rejection of the infinite God, well, then it demands, as a matter of justice, the highest form of penalty, and I think hell fits the bill for that.
What about annihilationism? Even among certain evangelical leaders, that's become attractive in the last generation. Why is it not a reasonable alternative just to have the soul disappear?
Yeah. No, this is very good. And this actually came up recently, right, in the alleged statements of Pope Francis saying how, you know, there is no hell, the soul is annihilated, which the Vatican responded and said, no, this is not an authentic conveying of what the Pope said. And I think fundamentally, as I point out in the book, Al, is that annihilation of the soul would violate God's wisdom. And that is this. You could ask this question to your friend. Why would God create a soul with an immortal nature, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, only to thwart it? That doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that God would create a soul with an immortal nature and then thwart that nature. So creating it and then, oh, well, it's not going, the individual is not going to choose me, so I'm just going to annihilate. So it goes against God's wisdom. It doesn't make sense. As St. Thomas Aquinas argues, God's power is manifest in preserving things in existence. Think about that. God's power is manifest in preserving things in existence. So if God were to annihilate the soul, take the soul out of existence, well, then that, according to Aquinas, would hinder the manifestation of God's power. And then finally, you can explain how it belongs to God's goodness to make a distinction between loyal and disloyal subjects and to give them their just deserts. So, for example, let's say your parents gave their inheritance to one of your siblings who had rejected them all their life and continued to reject them right up to their death, right? Would it be just for your parents to give that sibling their inheritance, especially when you had been faithful to your parents throughout your entire life and remained faithful till their death? And hopefully, I think your friend, it's safe to say your friend would see that. That would be an injustice, right? That would be contrary to justice. Similarly, God is going to give the reward of heaven to his faithful children, and those who reject him will not receive that reward.
Carlo, hold it there. We'll come back, continue the conversation. My guest, Carlo Broussard, the book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. We've been illustrating the methodology of the book. We'll come back and look over the wide range of content.
It wouldn't be spring in Michigan without the famous St. Florian Parish Strawberry Festival Saturday, May 5th from 5 to 11 p.m. and on Sunday, May 6th from 1 to 10. Featuring delicious strawberry desserts, Polish food, and the Polish Muslims Band, dance ensembles, a raffle, and much more. St. Florian's is located in Hamtramck, northeast of the I-75 Holbrook exit. See events under the News tab at stflorianparish.org. That's stflorianparish.org.
Looking for affordable Catholic health care? Look no further. CMF Curo is the only Catholic health ministry which provides an established healthcare program, spiritual growth opportunities within Catholic community, and unique wellness programs and health tools. Plus, it is half the cost of many insurances. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com or visit cmfcuro.com. CMF Curo. It's my Catholic healthcare.
Hi, I'm Dan Weingartz. Our family has been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment for your lawn since 1945. Our experts will help you choose the right product from top brands like Steel. From legendary chainsaws, dependable trimmers, and powerful blowers, a Steel is designed for reliability and built for the long haul. And our expert service technicians and world-class parts inventory will keep your equipment running like new. Visit us to see the full Steel line or see all of our specials at Weingartz.com.
Weingartz, everything from lawn to snow.
Now, at the Ave Maria online store, we have a reason to believe, an apologetic for the resurrection by Father John Ricardo. The identity of Jesus boils down to one of three options. Is Jesus Lord, liar, or a lunatic? The key is found in the resurrection. This topic takes a deep dive and then asks you to think critically about the answers. An apologetic for the resurrection is at the Ave Maria online store at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
This is Life News Radio. I'm Jim Anderson. Days after Alfie's death, everyone from religious leaders to eugenic experts continue offering opinions on what should have been done with Alfie Evans. His parents wanted to take Alfie to Italy and then to home and were offered the means to do so. Powerful officials deprived them of that. The problem now with politicians, prelates, hospital administrators, or radio announcers offering what should be done with children is that children are given by God and by nature to parents. And in total, parents, naturally and reasonably, are the ones most likely to make the best decisions. Nearly 200 members of Congress are asking for executive branch defunding of Planned Parenthood. Legislators are asking HHS Secretary Alex Azar to be quick about drafting new Title X family planning regulations. They are concerned that abortion providers like Planned Parenthood use Title X as a slush fund to support a wide range of abortion industry priorities. This is Life News Radio. News at Life News Radio should make you think, and often it should make you think about calling your elected officials in Washington, D.C. So remember this phone number, 202-224-3121. Let your senators, your representatives, hear from you. 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. The Trump administration is investigating Hawaii for receiving federal funding while compelling health workers to promote abortion in violation of their conscience. An attorney representing medical workers says states that require pro-life doctors and staff to act contrary to their conscience don't qualify for federal funds. For pro-life headlines delivered to your email address daily, sign up at lifenews.com. This has been Life News Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and with me is Carlo Broussard. You know him well from Catholic Answers Live. He's a staff apologist there, a regular speaker for Catholic Answers, and you hear him on the radio program usually when I go off the air. So it's great to have him with us. His book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church, I think really does model for us an outstanding way of doing evangelization and apologetics. I mean, there's no way in this society that we can share the gospel and not anticipate objections. There's so much misunderstanding out there. People are becoming less and less familiar with the biblical narrative. And so people are, well, we are more culturally ignorant of some basic biblical material. We're more ignorant about basic theological and ethical maxims. And so more and more, if we want to share the faith, we're going to have to be prepared to answer questions. Now, if you don't know the answer to a question, don't pretend you do. You can always get back with the inquirer. But what Carlos does in this book is it lays out for a wide range of questions various strategies.
in answering the questions. I'd like to give the just give listeners an example, an idea of how wide-ranging this is. So you look at how many questions in the whole book? About 35?
There's 34.
34 questions. And yes, they deal with Jesus, Christianity, the church, preparing the way for truth, preparing the way for God. So you got pre-evangelistic material there as well.
Yeah.
And you deal with not only the classic theological objections, but you also deal with some contemporary objections, like, the abuse crisis. Does the church hate gay people? Why does the church have so many rules? Why are the rituals so boring? That kind of thing. So it's not just the problems derived from theological difficulties,
right,
but from lived social experience as well. Did you... I mean, to write a book this comprehensive takes quite a bit of time, I would think. How long were you working on this?
Well, that's an interesting question, Al, because, you know, I had started doing the research even before I came on with Catholic Answers 2.5 years ago when I was working for Father Robert Spitzer in the Majus.
Yeah, sure.
I had already started studying at least the preambles of faith with regard to truth and God, is initiating myself into the world of philosophy, because prior to working with Father Spitzer, I didn't have much philosophical training, so I had to play a lot of catch-up when I started working with Father Spitzer, obviously.
Right.
So I started collecting material, because I knew eventually one day when I start writing, because I wasn't a writer at the time, when I start writing, I would like to write on this content. And then I started introducing myself to the basic Christian apologetics, talking about, you know, the historicity of the Gospels and of Jesus' sayings and the resurrection, and getting into that world of apologetics and collecting data. And so I when I came on at Catholic Answers, I had a desire to want to write a book that cataloged common objections, or in this case for the book, the motif is obstacles, that unbelievers face. Because, Al, for so long in the modern apologetics movement, started by our founder, Carl Keating, all of the books coming out were cataloging those common objections from Protestants.
Right.
And it had to do with the Catholic-Protestant dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to create a book or write a book that sort of cataloged those common objections that we get from unbelievers, because we're constantly faced with these objections given the secularization of our culture, the growth of atheism and agnosticism and skepticism. We're constantly bumping shoulders and rubbing elbows with these sorts of folks. So I wanted to catalog those kinds of objections. And so I started to get to your question in particular, I started writing it in November of, November of 2016, and then finished it May of last year. And then we started editing it this past January, and it came out, you know, recently.
Yeah.
So it was quite a process. It was a lot of fun, I must say, Al. It was a great, journey putting it together.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful. I got to give it a shout out to the Catholic Answers team, and especially my editor, Todd Egler-Laurel.
Yeah.
Who put so much hard work into helping me get this thing published. So I'm quite pleased with it. I like it. And I think, as you said, Al, it's going to be a great collection, a great addition to the apologetics collection, because of the variety of topics that it covers and also the unique style of the coaching manual and strategies to remove these obstacles and prepare a way for the Lord.
Yeah, I like the use of the word coaching, because you clearly have that capacity to show step by step how these questions can be dealt with. You don't just offer one quick answer and bang, let's move on to something else. This is a very patient book. Let's take one of the objection, which is the most difficult, I think, for people to come to grips with, both existentially and evangelistically. How can I believe in God when there's so much useless suffering in the world?
Yes. Yeah, well, this actually, Al, is known as the evidential problem of evil. It's there's all different kinds and versions of the problem of evil.
Right. There's the logical problem of evil, which is a little different.
That's right. That's right. The logical version says, well, if evil exists, God doesn't exist. Evil exists, therefore God doesn't exist. And then I actually deal with that objection or that obstacle in the previous chapter, in chapter 7 of the book. And the useless suffering chapter is known as the evidential version of the problem of evil. So somebody might say, an atheist or an agnostic might say, well, look, maybe the presence of evil is not logically incompatible with God's existence.
Right.
But, I mean, come on, Carlo. There's so much evil in the world.
But on balance, for heaven's sakes, Carlo.
That's
on balance.
And
come
useless,
on.
And useless evil. I mean, evils of such atrocity, there's no possible way we could possibly see some kind of good coming out of it.
Right.
Therefore, that gives me good justification to believe that God doesn't exist. And the first strategy I point out, Al, is we have to show that the argument begs the question. And what that means is that the objection assumes what it's trying to demonstrate in its conclusion, namely that God probably doesn't exist. Because think about this. An evil, whatever, however atrocious it may be, I don't know, if you stub your toe on a foot or the most atrocious evil that you can think of,
mm-hmm.
An evil, to say that no good could come from that evil, that is true if and only if God doesn't exist. Because if God does exist, then there is no good that God cannot bring out of that evil.
Right.
So in order to get an evil in your argument from which no good can come, you have to assume that God doesn't exist. But that's what the argument is trying to conclude with to begin with,
right?
So it's assuming in its argumentation, in its premise, the premise that there are gratuitous evils in the world, the premise that there are useless evils in the world, that premise assumes, in order for that premise to be true, it must assume that God doesn't exist. But that's what the argument is trying to prove in the conclusion. So it's fundamentally committing a fallacy of begging the question, also known as circular reasoning. And then, you know, we could...
It also has the problem, doesn't it, of how would you know that this is a gratuitous evil?
That's right. Because of the limitations of our finite, you know, canoggins here,
mm-hmm.
because of the limitations of our intelligence, we could not possibly know that there is no good that will be brought about from this evil, especially from our limitations of time and space, not to mention the finiteness of our intelligence. So the objection assumes that you could possibly know, but we would respond and challenge that assumption and say there is no possible way for you, a finite intelligent being, to know that no good can come from this evil, and therefore the objection falls apart.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to the person?
What would you say then?
The person's response is, "Well, it's true. I can't know that there is no answer." Or no good that can come from this, what appears to be a gratuitous evil, but I'm willing to go on just the way it appears to me right now.
Yeah, well, first of all, I would say the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence,
mm-hmm.
right? So just because you can't see or know of a good that will come from this evil, it doesn't follow that there is no good, okay? So that's the first thing.
Right.
Now, if the inquirer sort of retracts into that position, well, now we're not really dealing with any sort of intellectual problem. Now we're moving into the emotional problem.
Right, exactly.
And namely, the question of, okay, well, I can't see a good that's going to come from it, and I can't say there is no good, so what the heck do I do,
yeah, right? Right,
and
right.
So now we're actually asking, the inquirer is asking the question, how do I endure the suffering and the evil without being entrapped in the death grip of despair and depression what purpose and meaning could I possibly find in the suffering? Mm-hmm. And now that's where we go to the following chapter. I think it's chapter 9, where we deal with the emotional problem. And I offer strategies on how to remove this obstacle. And this is where we have to bring in the revelation of Christianity. Now, at this point in the conversation, Al, obviously our inquirer is not going to hold to the truth of Christianity, but at least we can show them what Christianity has to offer,
right.
What light
right.
Christianity has to offer in the darkness of suffering. And that is to say, number one, Jesus reveals that all suffering will eventually end and be redeemed, and all who stay faithful to him will be compensated with great rewards in the eternal life of heaven. Secondly, we have to explain that our suffering, when offered to God out of love through Jesus Christ, can actually be the ladder by which we attain that eternal reward of heaven. And thirdly, we have to explain how Christianity teaches that when suffering offered to God out of love through Jesus Christ can actually help others obtain that eternal reward in heaven as well. And that's the message of redemptive suffering in
right.
Christianity.
Yeah. And isn't that worth looking into?
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. As Frank Sheed said, you know, a little bit of light is better than no light at all.
Very good. Carla, thank you so much. And we'll talk again. I love the book, though. I want you to know. I think it's magnificent. Great job.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. God bless you.
Carlo Broussard, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare cost? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
Recently, we defended several pro-lifers who were involved in what they describe as the Red Rose Rescue. These courageous pro-lifers peacefully entered the waiting rooms of two notorious abortion centers located in Michigan. They did not possess weapons nor an intent to do harm. Rather, they were armed with a red rose and a message of love for those in the waiting room. They reasonably believed that in the waiting rooms of these abortion centers were women and unborn babies who were in imminent harm of serious bodily injury and death. The pro-lifers were arrested, tried, and convicted. During their trial, they were denied a defense of necessity, which the law typically recognizes because it is unjust to punish those who may technically violate the law when they are acting to promote or achieve a higher social value than would be achieved by strict adherence to the law. In this case, the highest social value is the defense of innocent human life. Make no mistake, abortion kills thousands of innocent lives each day. Yet there is no public outrage because the killing is kept out of the public view and hidden beneath the veneer of legal protection. Lady Justice is blind in ways that are beneficial to society, but in this case, her blindness to innocent life in the womb is far from just. We are appealing these convictions in the hope that authentic justice might be achieved. I'm Robert Buse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Let me remind you again that Carlo's book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church, available in the online bookstore at AveMariaRadio.net. Also, check the EWTN religious catalog. And my conversation with Father Hahn is also, well, the conversation isn't contained in this book, but there is a testimony from Father Hahn in the book Apostolic Athletes. 11 priests and bishops reveal how sports helped them follow Christ's call. So his story is contained in that book, and of course the book is available, as all the books we talk about in this program are available at AveMariaRadio.net. Also check the EWTN religious catalog, because I suspect they've got this book as well. Now, let me tell you what's coming up as I go off the air. Catholic Answers Live coming up. Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin opening the phone lines, answering questions. And then tonight on EWTN television is Dr. Jared Stout on how John Senior's work is still relevant, especially for in the field of higher education. Now, we tomorrow on Crest in the afternoon, our friend Dr. Matthew Bunsen will come with us, giving us what's coming up on Register Radio. Dr. Matthew Levering on Vatican II as a theological event, and Father James Garnow on Father Tom Price, who is the Tar Heel priest of North Carolina, whose cause has been opened up. There's a number of causes for potential saints here, to be those who will be recognized as saints, in the United States, and looking at their lives, you actually get a history of the U.S. We're going to talk that over with Father James tomorrow. Let me thank you for being with me today. Get more information on AveMariaRadio.net. Keep us in your prayers. I'll see you tomorrow.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.